Good morning. Welcome to Thursday's Kildare Today programme with Owen Beattie and Ciara Noble. Coming up between now and 11 o'clock, a new report by adoptee rights group Ahantus highlights the continued struggles of adoptees in this country. A plan to maximise the economic impact of the Barrow Blue Way has been published. We'll speak to Martin Hayden on that. Some creches are restricting entry for children for 14 days if they've been abroad. Interested to get your views on that if you do have children in creches, because we're going to be joined by Chair of the Federation of Early Childcare Providers, Elaine Dunn, after 10 o'clock. The Neurological Alliance of Ireland outlined the impact of the pandemic on neurological care, motions and issues from the Kildare, Newbridge and Thigh Municipal Districts. And if you want to give a rescue hen a new home, we'll tell you how you can do that, because Little Hill Animal Rescue, as I choke on the cornflakes, Little Hill Animal Rescue and Sanctuary are coming to Kildare over the next couple of weeks as well. All of that between now and 11 o'clock. As always, your messages are welcome. You can text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97, email studio at kfmradio.com, or call us on 045 901 490.
Kildare's KFM Morning Newspaper Review.
Morning, Ciara. How are we doing?
Good morning. How are you?
Not too bad after that. Just nearly choked, but other than that, I'm fine. Busy programme coming up between now and 11, as I said, so we'll get into the newspapers. And Ciara, just to start off with the Irish Times, because a lot of the papers are covering this morning. And, of course, we had John Downing, the political editor or political correspondent with the Irish Independent yesterday. And the headline in the Irish Times, the Taoiseach says O'Malley lived a life of courage and consequence. Des O'Malley died yesterday at the age of 82. He lived a life of courage and consequence, said Taoiseach Micheál Martin, while the President Michael D. Higgins praised his outstanding example of dedicated public service, often delivered under great pressure. Mr. O'Malley was in the front line of politics for 3.5 decades, first as a leading member of Fianna Fáil, and then as the leader of the internal opposition in that party to the leadership of Charles Haughey, before being expelled from the party by Haughey and going on to found the Progressive Democrats. And there was plenty of tributes pouring in for Mr. Des O'Malley yesterday afternoon and yesterday morning as well. Ciara, into the Irish Independent then, and that tragic story that we heard in our news there at 9 o'clock, a young mother in Cavan dying after drowning.
Yeah, we did hear it there on the news, Owen. County Cavan, as you said, she was in her late 20s. She got into difficulty at around 8:30 yesterday evening. She entered the water at Loch Gowna. They believed that she entered the water, Gardaí this is, to help her child return to the shore. But then she herself got into difficulty. Her body's been taken to Cavan General Hospital. A post-mortem is expected to be carried out. But again, we mentioned this the other day, Owen, with the drowning of that young boy. It's just awful when the weather is good that we hear about these stories. And I don't know if you remember this time last year, there was that American actress from that TV show Glee, and supposedly she drowned helping her own son get back on a boat, and he was safe back on the boat, but unfortunately she obviously got into difficulty and she was later found dead from drowning. So again, it's just reiterating the importance of water safety, isn't it? Because we don't get the good weather here, and we get all so excited and can't wait to cool down, but just please be careful, because just reading these stories, just reading them, not even thinking about being a member of the family, it's just devastating.
Yeah, and it's heartbreaking that even it's in these circumstances that we have to reiterate water safety. You know, we'd much prefer to say, look, everybody stay safe on the water and then everybody is safe. But unfortunately, that's not the way it is. And we hear about these drownings each and every year. But I think, look, as Ciara said, we had John Leach, the CEO of Water Safety Ireland, on the programme last week. You can check that interview out on our website, kfmradio.com. Their website, watersafety.ie, has some great advice as well. And if you are heading out to the water over the coming days, maybe just consult that website and take some tips from it. Ciara, we'll stay with you in the Independent. Couple charged after gender reveal smoke bomb sparks deadly wildfire. Now, we're seeing, obviously, these gender reveals are becoming more popular, but also we've seen a couple of accidents from them them as well.
Yeah, so really these gender reveals have been extremely popular in America over the past, I'd say, 2-3 decades, but they're coming to Ireland more and more. But in California, a couple are now facing manslaughter charges because a fire allegedly erupted after they tried to set off a smoke bomb to announce the gender of their baby. So the fire had already been burning for 12 days on the 17th of September 2020 when a 39-year-old firefighter, Charles Morton, was killed trying to extinguish it. So it tore through San Bernardino National Forest, which is massive. It burned more than 20,000 acres. It was one of several disasters, as you mentioned, Owen, in relation to gender reveal parties. The practice, it's led to a fatal plane crash, partygoers' tragic deaths, other wildfires and bushfires. At the peak of this particular fire, more than 1,350 firefighters, including Charles Morton, were obviously tasked to try and douse the blaze. The couple themselves, they did try to extinguish the fire using water bottles, but obviously they had no chance, and they did call 911 over in the States. But yeah, now facing manslaughter charges for a gender reveal. It's a pretty crazy story.
Absolutely. Another day, another scam, it would seem. A story just gone up online on the Irish Examiner's website. Gardaí have issued a warning to the public of a recent smishing scam, is what it's being called here, after a number of people got text messages claiming to be from Permanent TSB advising of unusual online activity. The messages contain a link which will bring customers to a cloned website of the bank and ask for pins and passcodes as well as other information. Officers say the information asked for is much more than what the bank would usually seek. There are other smishing texts being received, and these can purport to be from service providers, revenue banks and or delivery businesses, with some fitting into the threads of previously received genuine texts, which adds an air of authenticity to them. So that's just breaking this morning that Permanent TSB customers urged to be mindful of that. If you receive a text, it is not coming from Permanent TSB themselves. Kira, in the journal then, and I want to go over to Australia, because a lot of people have been commenting on this on social media, that Australia, I suppose, and New Zealand were once looked on as the example during this pandemic, but it seems as though now the vaccine rollout is quite slow.
I don't know if you'd say that they're still not the example, Owen. There's so few cases over in both of those countries, and look, they've had so few deaths, which has to be applauded, doesn't it? But Scott Morrison, he is the Prime Minister over in Australia, and he's under pressure, as you mentioned, about the vaccination rate. So the country is currently around 11%. It's among the lowest rates of any of the, I guess, richer nations in this world. He's quoted as saying, "I'm sorry we haven't been able to achieve the marks we'd hoped for at the beginning of the year. I take responsibility for the vaccine programme. I also take responsibilities for the challenges we've had. We know at the moment that Sydney is in lockdown. There's 124 new cases recorded in New South Wales. They've been in lockdown for about a month, and it seems as if the stay-at-home order is not going to be lifted anytime soon, because obviously the Delta variant is much more contagious. They, as a country, Australia, did bet heavily on the AstraZeneca vaccine, which is now only recommended to Australians over the age of 60 due to blood clotting fears. And health officials complain Australia is awash with the AstraZeneca vaccine, but they're not expecting supplies of Pfizer or any other mRNAs until later in the year. But as we know, in this country and in other countries, they know now what to do in a situation if somebody was to have some sort of blood clotting due to AstraZeneca. So the age limit in other countries has been lifted, so maybe the Australians could do the same. Who knows?
Yeah, and the Australian lockdowns as well are much stricter, really, than here, or just certainly more quicker to lock down places, like particularly in Sydney. Like, I think that was only a cluster of a small amount, and as soon as they heard that there was an outbreak, they shut down the city. But Kira, just sticking with the whole topic of vaccination then, and this is a headline that will catch a lot of people's attention. Retail workers are being docked pay or have to pay back time to attend COVID-19 vaccine appointments.
Yeah, so a few, I want to say it's about 2 months ago now, we spoke to people on Kildare Focus and Kildare Today about this issue. So retail workers are getting in touch with the journal here, and they're claiming that they've been, as you said, docked pay or asked to stay back late to pay back the time that they had taken to get their vaccine. It's despite the government and NPHET, obviously, I guess, asking employers to you know, give some leeway when it comes to vaccination appointments. The number of people that have said that their employer has asked them to book an annual leaves day to get vaccinated, a lot are coming into the journal. They're saying they're docked their pay. They're also asking them to reschedule their appointment, which we hear is not the thing to do. You accept the first appointment you get. There's a 28-year-old here speaking to the journal Midwest of the country saying, "We are told our wages are docked for the time we're gone for the vaccine until we are backed, or to work back however long we've been gone at the end of our shift. For example, I'm working 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. and I have my first vaccination at 3:20. I'll have to leave at 3, so I'll be docked my last hour because I won't be back in time." As we know, 15 minutes is the leeway after you have been vaccinated. And someone else is saying here, "I got my vaccination appointment last Thursday for this coming Friday. I told my line manager and requested a day's annual leave. I don't particularly mind this part, despite not fully agreeing with it." So people seem to just kind of be taking it on the chin because I guess they note, and for them it's important to be vaccinated.
Yeah, there was also something else that I read about that people as well were asking the officials who were vaccinating them, say in vaccination centres or even their doctors, could they skip that 15 minutes afterwards that, you know, you have to sit and be watched after you get the vaccine because they didn't want to lose out on more time on work. And they were like, "Can we just get the vaccine and go straight back to work?" But obviously that's not the safest thing to do and certainly not the advice. Headline in the Examiner then, "Secondary school pupils to learn about Magdalen Laundry and mother and baby home abuses." Ciara, I don't know, when you were in secondary school or even primary school, did you ever hear anything about the Magdalen Laundries, or were you taught about it?
No, I wasn't. And I do remember, it was only a few years ago, Owen, I watched the Magdalen Sisters for the first time. And anybody who knows me knows I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because, like, out of awkwardness, I was so affected by watching that movie. And it was only a movie. And I just couldn't believe this was happening in the country I'd grown up in. Do you know what I mean?
It's just,
for me personally, and I'm sure for you too, it's just hard to even get your head around that this has happened. And it's still horrific. And it's, yeah, look, it's these women are still suffering all these years later, and children.
Yeah, and one thing as well that we've pointed out on this programme, and I still can't get my head around, is the fact that there are some women who have been in Magdalen Laundries that are still alive, because it is that recent. We're not talking about back in the 1920s or the 1930s.
Oh, and I think
right up until the 90s.
Yeah, I think the last one closed in the mid-90s.
Yeah, I think it was around 96.
Yeah, I think so too, yeah.
But, like, it's incredible. But I think this is welcome. Secondary school pupils will be taught about the human rights violations suffered in industrial schools, Magdalen Laundries and other mother and baby institutions under a new national pilot programme. NUI Galway's Irish Centre for Human Rights has published secondary school teaching materials on Ireland's institutional abuses, which have been created with survivors and school teachers, pupils, activists and artists. And Ciara, that's another thing as well that sometimes is brought up, you know, in school, and even when we're talking about this country in particular, we tend to gloss over the bad parts of our history and just talk about the positives. I know a lot of countries do that as well, but we have to embrace it, talk about it and teach people about what happened.
Yeah, you look at the Black Lives Matter movement, you're totally right. I think every human tends to gloss over the mistakes that happened in the past, whether we were there or not. We have to face it and we have to deal with it. And the only way to get over things like that is to educate the people who weren't affected. And it is, unfortunately, watching, you know, movies and hearing the stories that then you get just a tiny bit of a view into the window of what these people go through. Because, again, you're watching these things and you're hearing these things and you cannot get your head around it. Like, you literally cannot. And especially when things come to the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, it's incredible how, you know, I guess parts of our history have been wiped at times.
And like I say, it's not just in Ireland, but other countries as well around the world will tend to focus on the positive parts of their history rather than talk about some of the negatives or, you know, parts that paint them in a not so positive light. Ciara, it looks as though your wedding plans are in chaos after the Tánaiste indicates guest list may not rise to 100 in August. What are you going to do?
Are they? Okay, I didn't know I was getting married, but new news to me. Alan O'Regan has this one. So we know at the moment the guest list is 50. I mean, out of the two of us, you're probably the one closest to going down the aisle or up the aisle or whatever you do.
Am I? I
don't. The aisle.
Men don't walk down the aisle, though, do they?
They walk up it.
They walk up it, right, okay. Go on.
But you're the closest. I see you're avoiding it. Well, you are, yeah. So currently, as I said, 50 people are allowed to go to weddings. It was due to double in August, and on August 5th, I know somebody who's getting married, and they were noting that, I had to cut down so many people, but, you know, I'm happy to get married in August now, 100 people.
But come here, some people are actually happy about having a smaller guest list, and I can see where they're coming from, because
they save money, don't they?
You save money, but also you're not inviting your third cousin once removed or whatever. You know, you can just bring the people who are closest to you. You're surrounded by your close family and close friends.
Look, I'm one of those people that think if you have a wedding, just do what you as a couple want to do. Yeah. I think it's a bit silly when you start taking everything else into consideration, because you'd have a guest list, especially at an Irish wedding, as long as I don't know what. I have a huge family, so I actually am very close to my extended family. So if I was go to even my second cousins, I'd be into like easily the thousands or something. But anyway, Leo Varadkar has said that it only might change to 100. He doesn't anticipate many restrictions being lifted in coming weeks. Tara Fay, she's the president of the Irish Wedding Association OWN, and she says that there's been a deafening silence from the government about those or towards those who are working in the wedding industry. She's saying that weddings are very different, and she does have a point here, OWN. So obviously now there's no live music, so there's no first dance. You have to remain seated at your table of six. So if there was contact tracing, that's the best way, she's noting, for the system to happen, because every wedding will have a table plan. They'll know exactly who's there, and they'll know who's sitting for the dinner, who comes, you know, for the afters. I don't know if it works that way anymore during the pandemic, but as opposed to before, when you'd have, you know, hundreds of people coming in at different times of the day, and also the age profile of the wedding couples and guests now would be fully vaccinated. So she's noting maybe that should be taken into account. It's a good point.
Yeah, just finally then, in the Irish Times, skin cancer set to treble over 20 years with men at greater risk. The number of skin cancer cases is set to treble over the next 20 years. The incidence of melanoma increasing in men at a much greater rate than in women. That's according to the Irish Cancer Society, and Kildare Focus will be touching on that later on this afternoon between 2 and 3 o'clock. Right, just a message come in then from Bridget, and Bridget, I'm assuming that's for the gardening slot with John. That'll be on about 20 past 11 this morning. You're asking me about brown spots on a plant, and to be honest, I wouldn't have a clue about that. So Jim or Yvonne will be on with John at 20 past 11 this morning, so make sure that you tune in to that. All right, lots more to come after the break. We'll be speaking to Marie Ryan O'Brien. She's the founder of Ahantus. Welcome back to the programme. Now, over half of adoptees feel that lack of access to identity information and biological medical information has affected them. That's according to the hashtag Repeal the Seal Adoptee Voices report, which was launched yesterday by adoptee rights group Ahantus. And the founder of Ahantus and co-author of that report that I mentioned is Marie Ryan O'Brien. Marie, good morning to you. Welcome to the programme again.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm not too bad. So take me through some of the main findings then of this report, Marie, because it's very extensive. But I suppose the main thing here is that it highlights those struggles of adoptees here in this country.
It does indeed. As you've detailed, it's quite an extensive report, 75 pages in total. We've taken in, I think, about 507 respondents, 19 of whom were genealogists, the rest were adoptees or the children of adoptees or spouses or partners of adoptees. So it's very clear from the findings that we have that, you know, there's a profound intergenerational effect of adoption, which obviously affects not just adoptees, but their immediate families as well. This is not specific to a home or institution or to a remit, because, as you're aware, the remit of the Commission of Inquiry was quite limited, but it's experienced by all adoptees to a greater or lesser extent. So one of our first recommendations was that there should be an equal right to participate in any process in which we're directly affected, that this should be the baseline for inclusion, should simply be being adopted as opposed to specific homes, remits, agencies and so on. We looked at terminology, we looked at other areas to do with memorialization, archiving, where it should be cited and so on. But I mean, the most significant findings we found was the abject failure of the social work model that adoptees have to interact with, and also that one of the main concerns, which understandably would be access to medical information. So we're not altogether too confident that the bill that's at pre-legislative scrutiny stage at the moment will deliver on that need for information. So what we have called for is a health screening programme which includes enhanced health screening and earlier access to existing health screening mechanisms for adoptees and their children to fill that void of information.
I just want to pick up there on a point that you mentioned, Marie. Participants in the survey frequently referred to how the denial of these rights affected them. And this is, like you mentioned, the inaction of successive governments. You say it's a loss of identity and it's now intergenerational. So it's not just affecting the adoptees themselves, but their children, their grandchildren and so on.
Indeed, yeah. We've used quotes from respondents who were children and grandchildren of adoptees in the report. In particular, there's somebody who refers to having seen her mother go through this ordeal of trying to find information as it being heartbreaking. And their parents having lived with this void of not knowing who they are, their parents are. So I think it's really understandable that it would cause distress and upset, not simply not knowing their own heritage, like, or 50% thereof, but seeing a parent go through this and the pain and anguish that it has caused, unnecessarily, we might add, because, I mean, there have been advances in other European countries, and as we detail in the report, Ireland is an outlier in that regard, in that we're, you know, very, very slow to enact legislation that allows adoptees access to their own information. So in many ways, this inactivity or lack of legislation has allowed this to become kind of a compound factor, in the sense that it's more profound here than it would be in other jurisdictions because this identity information has been denied for so long.
It becomes a lifelong quest, really, for these adoptees, and we take it for granted. Somebody who has a birth cert and knows where they come from and knows their family tree and their family history, but it doesn't even bear thinking about, really, for those who haven't a clue. And they become consumed by this, by trying to find out just simply who they are. And I know there's a part of this survey that you did and a part of the report under genealogy research. So it presents results from a short context survey of genealogists and family history researchers. What did you find in relation to that?
Well, we found that most of the genealogist who actually took part, it was kind of a balance between professional genealogists, family and family history researchers, most had a connection to it, that it was extended family or somebody they knew who was adopted, who they helped. But we found that the genealogy research was a great support to adoptees in that they were able to identify biological family members. There are the genealogists, I think, in some instances, and assisted with reunions. So we found that 70% were able to find, actually locate biological relatives, and that the success rate for reunions in that regard was higher. So we have looked at that and said, well, this is kind of a light touch minimum intervention model where the best interests of the adoptee were put first, and that has worked. And contrasted that against the social work model that we have. But we went further then with the following context survey and asked adoptees how would they like those genealogy supports delivered, and 100% of adoptees wanted it delivered in a one-off grant that they were given to assist them in tree building. And that again makes perfect sense because many adoptees are at different stages in their tree. Some are more advanced, some have yet to do it. So the provision of this as a service by, say, a centre or the government wouldn't be really suitable. What adoptees wanted was essentially that this would be something that they would control, which again goes to the fact that there is this sensitivity about information, who owns it and who controls it, and there was this wish that they should have autonomy over that particular aspect of their own identity themselves. That's why they welcomed the support. They wanted it to be something that they had control over themselves. There's also, you know, significant findings as regards the view of adoptees that they feel that there's still shame and stigma attached to being adopted, that they feel that they're treated or perceived differently if they say they're adopted. We also touch on terminology or, you know, the use of language around this area, and we've, you know, used a phrase that I don't mean to single her out, but it was just an encapsulation, I suppose, of everything. A particular phrase that ministers have only used, which was in the context of the reply to a parliamentary question, where she stated that they sought to protect a potentially vulnerable cohort of birth parents. So the inference from that was that it was vulnerable and that adoptees were a threat to be protected from. So, I mean, if you marry that with the finding that people feel that they're treated or perceived differently and were denied access to our own information, then essentially you can understand why there is that feeling there that, you know, there's this language of threat and weaponization used combined with this almost sense of criminality about it. And I think that, like, as you can see from the report, people have referred to, say, to different things, saying, I feel like, you know, I've been criminalized. I just want to know who I am. There are people who detailed how they didn't have access to biological medical information, how it has impacted on them, that they had stroke, heart attacks, diabetes, etc., that they had no knowledge that they had. So, I mean, allowing health screening would mean that we'd be able to identify these issues earlier, but also that because it would be earlier intervention, it could be better success at long-term outcomes for adoptees.
I just want to read a couple of the quotes from the Adoption Voices survey respondents, and one says, not knowing who you are, your predetermined DNA makeup, personality traits, growing up in an environment where you are a square peg trying to fit into a round hole, not knowing or able to understand why you don't fit in, this can lead to anxiety, self-doubt, low self-worth, depression, alcohol dependency, etc. Another one reads, I have a lot of unanswered questions and every little bit of information is vital. It hurts me deeply that total strangers who have nothing to do with me or my mother have access to information on us that we don't. And then finally, not knowing who you are, where you came from, or who you are related to, resemblances. Ireland is a very small country. Not knowing your natural family can be very complicated here. And I'll finish on this point then, Marie Ryan O'Brien, because we touched on it in our newspaper review a couple of moments ago. A headline reading in the Irish Examiner, secondary school pupils are to learn about Magdalene laundries and mother and baby home abuses, because I can see that one of your report recommendations is that this be brought into second level schools as well, that people be taught, and particularly students, be taught about what happened in these institutions, what the issues now are for people who were adopted, and that we start from that level of age, that people start getting an understanding from a young age.
Yeah, I mean, and while we would welcome that, we'd also have the caveat that not all of these issues that we've outlined in the report are specific to mother and baby homes or other institutions. Because, as you know, that you didn't have to be in a mother and baby home to be adopted. So, you know, there is this kind of narrow lens as regards this as an issue, that it just has been limited to knowledge around mother and baby homes. And what we call for in the report, our first recommendation, is the right for people who are equally affected to participate equally in a process in which they are directly affected. The second recommendation we have is that there is a new agency. We also recommend a full investigation into all adoption-related practices, including forced and coercive adoption, to include AAI and TUSLA, with detailed instances where adoptees have felt that because of the treatment that they've gotten from these agencies, that they're unable to go back. You know, so it's a much broader issue than is presented and has been presented by the Commission of Inquiry. The findings of the Commission, as we've detailed in the report, were extremely limited, so much so that they were highlighted by the UN Special Rapporteur as only ever being, indicative. It couldn't be conclusive. So we need a much broader remit as regards this particular area, but also that it should be taught at third level. That was supported by every respondent to the survey, many of whom were outside of the remit of the Commission. So, yeah, it's progress, but it needs to be much broader than it's presented at the moment.
Well, founder of AHANTIS and co-author of that report that we mentioned, which is available to view on the AHANTIS website, and that's spelled AITHEANTAS. Marie Ryan O'Brien, many thanks for joining us on the programme this morning.
There's actually a dedicated website for the report. It's adoptivevoices.ie, which has the full report, the recommendations, case studies, forward acknowledgement, all 75 pages is there if anybody wants to look it up.
Brilliant. Adoptivevoices.ie.
.ie.
Perfect. Marie, many thanks for joining us on the programme, and good morning to you. Let's go to Ciara Noble then in Studio 2.
Yeah, we're going to head now over to the Athy Municipal District, and it's good morning to Fianna Fáil Councillor Vera Louise Behan.
Good morning, Ciara. How are you?
I'm good. Vera Louise, we're going to start with your question to the council asking if it had outlined plans to make all the play equipment in the playgrounds in the Athy Municipal District suitable for children with disabilities. What report did you get on this?
Well, we got back that there are, rocket seats on every playground, but they hadn't planned to do that, but they're going to look into it. I'm just getting the question up here. They will review them and see if it can be improved, and it's to be considered in the next works programme. But it's not possible within this current programme, which is, it's a real pity, you know.
Vera Louise, can I just ask, what did you say, rocket seats?
They're swings.
Okay.
Basically, so it's like a car seat a child would sit in the back seat of a car, like a toddler would sit in. So it's just bigger. So a child could sit into it and be strapped into it and be able to enjoy the swing.
So basically, would that be the only amendment that's happening to the playground?
That's all I can see now. You know, it's not. You know, I mean, it's not enough, really. I mean, I know of other playgrounds in other districts who have a lot more equipment, swings that you can actually sit a wheelchair into, you know, different, like, roundabouts that are set up differently. Just playgrounds with more space between the play equipment for wheelchair users to be able to navigate them.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's not in this works programme, and they're going to consider it in the next one and make a budget for it. Like, I just think the built environment is hugely important to people with mobility issues, and the built environment needs to put their needs first and foremost, because if you don't have mobility issues, you can still use the equipment to a degree.
Yes, but, obviously, yes.
And it's children. Like, I mean, you know, children have been so hardly hit by this pandemic and everything,
okay.
You know.
Okay, no doubt. Hopefully we'll get an update on that soon. And Vera Louise, just to move on to your next motion, obviously pointing out that more people walking the roads, whether it's country or urban areas, but you're asking the council to erect signs at popular locations throughout Athy, the MD that is, warning motorists to take extra care.
Yes. Now, this the report I got back is there are signs up. Selina Sánchez signs are in different areas. I don't know if you're familiar with them or if the listeners are familiar with them. As a driver, they don't really catch your eye, right? So my idea comes off the back of if you're approaching a four crossroads and you have to stop at a stop sign directly across the road from you, say. There's a cross there just before they mention Mulla Creelan Woods there. If you're coming to Mulla Creelan Woods from Athy, you'll pass a four crossroads. It's called Sills Cross, and that's a road going between Athy and Castledermot, and it intersects with a by road between Moon and Megany, or Moon and Kilkee. And when you come up to that junction from, say, the Moon side, okay, in your sight line, when you look up and down the road just to make sure there's no traffic coming, but in your sight line is the reverse of the stop sign on the other side of the road, and you'll get that at all junctions, right? So my proposal would be to put a pedestrian awareness sign on the reverse of the stop signs. Does that make sense? I hope the listeners can
pick up
what I'm saying.
Yeah,
you know, it's the space is there. There's you don't have to put in extra signage and poles and stuff and build new signs. The space is there on the reverse of all these stop signs. Now, I'm sure there are laws in place that prohibit that, but the council gave me an undertaking that they'd look into it and look into those laws, because, I mean, you know, there are, we want to keep people out in the fresh air, keep people walking. It's really taken off during the pandemic. We all have all seen that.
Yes, and obviously safer to be outside than inside at the moment with the virus. Well, Fianna Fáil Councillor Vera Louise Behan, thank you so much for the time this morning.
All right, Ciara. Take care. Bye-bye.
Now, we'll get to some of your messages shortly. Keep them coming. 0833 97 97 97 on the text and the WhatsApp. But first of all, it's good morning to Sinn Féin Councillor on the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District, Noel Connolly. Welcome to the programme, Noel.
Thanks, Owen. Good morning to your listeners.
So you had a number of motions brought forward then to the recent meeting. And first of all, there appears to be an issue in terms of cars travelling at speed around the Ballykelly crossroads in Monastrevin.
That's right, yeah. Some of your listeners know Ballykelly Cross well. For those that don't, it's a crossroad on the Rattangan to Monastrevin Road. It's closer to Monastrevin. It's on the brow of a hill, and locals have described it as like playing Russian roulette, trying to exit from the Laka and Ballykelly sides of the road. It needs some sort of action. The grass has been cut at the cross, and this has made it a bit safer by improving visibility for people exiting onto the main road. But something needs to be done to let non-locals know how dangerous the cross is. The report, I understand in the report that there's budget constraints, but it needs action. I have asked that a funding source be identified, such as the next round of the low-cost accident scheme from the National Roads Authority, and I'm hopeful that this will help to deliver a solution.
Okay, you also asked the council to outline its plans for the 8.22 acres in its ownership between Beechgrove and St Patrick's Park in Rattangan.
Yep, the land is partly zoned for housing and partly for agriculture. The report from the council housing department says that there's no plans for housing on the site and that access will be required through St Patrick's Park. The regeneration of St Patrick's Park, it's a long time coming, and new homes in this land should have been factored into that plan. A conversation needs to be had with the residents of St Patrick's Park on the best way to allow access to the land behind there. It's council-owned land. It's a disgrace that we have this land in a prime location lying idle in the middle of a housing crisis, and I will be following up with the director.
And similarly then, you wanted to know what the plans were for the 4.5 acres in its ownership beside the pastures in Monastrevin.
Yeah, this piece of land, it's near Millstream Avenue in Monastrevin and on the pastures. It's zoned amenity and it's unsuitable for housing because part of it is on a floodplain. I'm not aware of any water source in the area that can contribute to flooding, but it might be something to do with the levels or the gradient of the land. I have asked that the council consider a local group like Monastrevin Soccer Club who play between St Evans Park and Barrett Park at the moment. Barrett Park's the old Ballykelly pitch, which is currently has housing been built around it and eventually on it. I had a motion last year for skate park in Monastrevin. This could also be possibly located here, so I'll be following that up as well.
All right, great stuff. Sinn Féin Councillor on the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District, Noel Connolly. Thanks for joining us, Noel, and good morning to you. Like I said, we'll get to some of your messages now. And Shannon O'Quistine texts into us saying that skin cancer is avoidable if people cover themselves and wear sun cream daily. Indeed, it is. And Kildare Focus, of course, will be joined by the Irish Cancer Society later on this afternoon between 2 and 3 o'clock. But the advice is always to wear a hat if you can, sun cream as well, as Shannon said, and cover yourselves up also. But sometimes that's not always as easy to do when we're hitting 29 or 30 degrees like we have been doing all this week. Morning, Owen. Passed through Maynooth yesterday. I must say well done to Brady's Pub after doing a beautiful job on their screens surrounding their tables. Well done, says Joan. And also Joan texting in to say that she's enjoying the programme. Thanks for that, Joan. Much appreciated. And one here saying that, Ciara, I'd say there are days you feel like you're married to Owen with him getting on to you. Ha ha. I think you have that the wrong way around. Me getting on to Ciara? Never. Absolutely never. Right, let's move on then. And as we said to you from the start of the programme, if you want to give a hen, a rescue hen, a new home, you can do so because Little Hill Animal Rescue and Sanctuary are coming to the various towns and villages in Kildare over the coming weeks and bringing their hen rescue operation to the county. Pauline McGlynn is a patron with Little Hill Animal Rescue, and you will I'm sure, recognise that name because she played Mrs. Doyle in Father Ted for many, many years. And earlier she spoke to Kira to discuss how you can get involved with this.
We've become kind of, well, I suppose, famous for rehoming ex-commercial hens. And I have to say that Selbridge has always been a great area for us to go to because lots of people are interested, I think, there to keep hens. And I think as well, you know, after the year and a half that we've had, a lot of people who've been planning, you know, and saying to themselves, do you know what, we really should get some hens. Now is the time. You know, just you don't need much to start. You just need a fox-proof shed to put them into at night, and that will be the start of it. Now, sadly, I have to tell people that is only really the start of it, because when people get used to having them there, they get bigger and bigger plans, you know, for their housing and the whole lot. You have people constructing mini Taj Mahal for these ladies, so it can become quite addictive having the hens. But I think that, you know, during the pandemic, we've all been spending a lot of time at home. And I think that sort of feeds into one of the things, which is that people, you know, looking after their gardens if they have one more and growing their own things. And of course, what easier and better way than to have your own hens, get your own eggs, and then you know exactly where everything is coming from, which I think is another thing that we're all, you know, getting different perspectives now, aren't we, on how we live. And it's, you know, if you adopt some of these hens, you'll have immediate eggs, I can tell you that. And they can often be quite depleted when they come out, because the only reason that we go in and save them is that at 18 months, they take a little break from laying commercially. Now, they're still laying, and they'll still lay for the rest of their lives.
And I just want to ask you about that. So these hens are 18 months old, and at this age it means they're no longer profitable for the farmer, so a lot of the time these hens are kind of thrown out with the bathwater, I guess you could say.
That's right, and not because they're not still laying, they will be, but just that's commercial farming for you, you know. So, I mean, to be honest with you, it also, you know, you see them coming out in different states from the farms. You can never tell until you go in how they're going to be. These ones will be free range, but having said that, free range in our heads isn't always free range in real life, you know, so they may not be able, or they may not have been roaming quite as freely as everybody thinks, so this will be just a new lease of life for them if they get to live in Selbridge or around and about there. And of course it's not just Selbridge that we'll be visiting as well. I mean, there'll be over the following weekend as well, the bank holiday weekend, we're going to Athy, Naas, Maynooth, and then on the 2nd of August, and what a lovely way to round off your bank holiday weekend, we'll be going to Kilcock. So, you know, there are plenty of drop-off points for people if they're interested. And I'm kind of hoping that, you know, when they hear me talking about the hens now, and they've been thinking, gee, maybe we should, you know, I've always thought it'd be nice. Now is the time. Just do it. Start simply, and you can take it from there. As long as you can keep those little ladies safe from the fox at night, then, you know, and give them a place to roost in, as I say, a fox-proof shed, then you have the start of it. You'll be a poultry keeper.
Now, just for booking, how can people do so?
Well, the best way, the easiest way, is to get onto the Little Hill Facebook page. And you'll see up there, there's a pinned post, you know, saying all of the places are around the country, indeed, that we're going to. But if you then direct message Little Hill, we'll message you back after you've booked your hens, and that way we'll know how many to bring with us on all of the trips. And then we'll message you back just saying what time we hope to be, you know, at the drop-off point on any particular day, depending on what run you're getting them from. And I would say, just to tell people, there's a small adoption fee of €6 per hen, and obviously that's for us to pay getting the hens and then bringing them all around the country is where we'll be going in different runs, you know. So it's always really exciting, you know, drive into wherever we're dropping them off and to see the people waiting for their lovely hens and indeed, therefore, their lovely eggs.
When people do take the hens home, what's the first thing they need to have set up, would say, in the car?
I guess a drink of water in this weather, don't you think? That would be just in case, you know. I mean, hopefully they won't be doing too long a journey once we've brought them to wherever the drop-off point is. But then, you know, I mean, when you get them home, if you've got in your shed, should it be the shed that you've decided, you know, to clear out and make into a hen house, however temporarily, it's some upside-down buckets, believe it or not, because they like to roost, and that's ideal for them. Sure, a bit of straw on the ground for them to scratch around in, and, you know, some hen food. I believe there's all kinds of things you can give them. I mean, I know that the rather spoiled rescues in Little Hill, they love all kinds of treats, you know, all the things that you would like to eat, like melons and grapes and all that. Yes, they love them too.
Good to know.
So it'll be a fight for the last of those good things. And there's all sorts of, you know, like meals, like, you know, oats and whatever else that you can give them. So they're really easy to feed, you know, and the thrill of having, I would say, instant eggs, because we hear stories of, you know, people driving home and hearing a little singing coming from the hens, and that's their little laying song, and sure enough, there might be eggs by the time you even get home.
Well, Pauline McGlynn, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us. The nearest date to us at the moment is the 24th of July, that's Saturday in Selbridge. Then the weekend of the August bank holiday, the 1st of August, the Sunday in Athy, Maynooth and Naas, and then on the 2nd, the Monday, which is the bank holiday, finally in Kilcock.
Kilcock, yeah. And, you know, anyone who books their hens, I would say just don't let them down, because, you know, they'll have had quite a journey to get to your, you know, to get away to freedom and to your drop-off point. And it's always heartbreaking if they have to, you know, someone lets them down and they have another long journey to get to the sanctuary, and they have to wait for their freedom and their good life just a bit longer, you know. And in this heat, it's hard for any of us, let alone the little hens. So but I do hope that people are more than tempted to have them, because they really will. You'll be rewarded with eggs and actually quite a lot of laughs. They're quite the characters.
Pauline McGlynn, thank you so much.
Thank you.